Hey everyone, I'm Adrian Wojnarowski, host of the Vertical Podcast with Woj, powered by digital media. I sat down with Philadelphia 76ers forward center Nerlens Noel, one of the league's most discussed players in this early part of the season. Noel is one of three young big men on the Sixers roster, along with Joel Embiid and Jahlil Okafor. And at 22 years old, Noel is fighting for minutes on these Sixers and fighting for the chance to fulfill his significant promise in anticipation of restricted free agency this summer. It's made for an uncomfortable, if not at times turbulent, year in Philadelphia. As Embiid emerges as the Sixers franchise star, the possibility of a trade continues to loom large for Noel, something that he's encouraged if, in fact, there isn't a significant role or future available to him in Philadelphia.
You know, I think as a young player that, you know, really wants to just go out there and play the game he loves, and it's really frustrating, you know, at this point in my career to just not be able to, you know, just really show what I'm capable of and, you know, show the steps I've taken year by year.
The son of Haitian immigrants, Noel was a childhood prodigy growing up outside Boston. Nearly 7 foot tall, the number one high school prospect in America, who would draw comparisons to another Boston son of island immigrants, Patrick Ewing.
I definitely started hearing him probably right around the time, you know, I started coming onto the scene. The only things I really had remembered, you know, was, you know, watching his classic games on like NBA TV and, you know, not really knowing too much about his background, you know, until I started, you know, hearing about comparisons.
And Noel talks in great detail about the challenge of growing up in the Sixers organization as a young professional, dealing with the public ridicule and the crisis of confidence that would come with the tanking and record losing streaks.
You know, I think I did a well job of trying to, you know, just still learn, you know, even through the losing and everything, how tough it was, you know, just, you know, stay mentally focused. You know, I think it really just, you know, comes from, you know, my roots of just, you know, being strong and very profitable and, you know, continuing to stay on the right path and, you know, really want to achieve great things.
So here's Sixers forward center Nerlens Noel. Here in New York on an off day for the Sixers with 76ers center Nerlens Noel. Nerlens, man, how are you? Thanks for doing this.
Thank you for having me. I'm doing well.
Nerlens, this season for you, listen, any player who goes into a free agency, into a contract year, there's lots of pressure. There's lots of expectations about, you know, the kind of season you want to have to put yourself in a position to get some security in this league. Did you expect it to be as complicated as it's become in terms of your minutes and your role in Philly and, you know, the pressure that puts on you to, you know, try to figure out the best way to navigate this whole thing? Did you see this coming, or did it kind of hit you by surprise a little bit about how complicated now your situation is going forward?
You know, I think it's, you know, been some time now, and, you know, through these last 3 or 4 years since I've been in Philadelphia, you know, I've just really tried to focus on, you know, playing my game, even through the struggles, even through the team struggles of, you know, winning and losing. So, you know, that's something I've been focused on. And, you know, now in this time, coming up on this year, you know, I had a mindset of, you know, what I was going to be able to do this season. And, you know, I saw, you know, what our roster, you know, portrayed and, you know, what it could potentially, you know, be like. And, you know, I still try to focus on what I could really control, but, you know, I didn't really think it would be this complicated at this point or even, you know, in the early gist of the season. But I think I've, you know, just really focused on just really just worrying about what I could control. And, you know, that's on the court and, you know, when I'm on the court and, you know, just maximizing that.
When you've had opportunity in Boston, in your hometown the other night, tremendous game against the Celtics, 13-8-3. In relatively limited minutes against a really good Celtic team. And listen, I'm sure there's part of you that wonders, what are those numbers over 35 minutes or 38 minutes? But you try to make the most of the ones you have. Having that kind of a night, especially at home, where you're always going to be a little more jacked up to do it in front of people you know who might be at the game, does that kind of a night keep you going, or does it sometimes frustrate you because it's, hey, this is what I can be doing if I have the opportunity?
You know, I think I've really put myself in a place where, you know, I'll go out here and, you know, play my game, you know, regardless of, you know, the situation or, you know, what the odds are. And I think, you know, it's brought me to a place where, you know, when I step on the court, I know what I'm capable of. And, you know, I step out there and show that. So, you know, I think it's maybe, you know, put a little bit more of a chip on my shoulder. But, you know, I use it as more of a, you know, a fueling method, you know, towards my game. And, you know, it's great being able to play back in Boston and showcase in front of a lot of family and friends.
Nerlens, going back to the preseason, on the eve of training camp, you publicly said, essentially, we have three centers. This can't go on. You know, I hope they move me to a place where, you know, I can have a bigger role and maybe that's a place I can sign. At that time, what was your mindset about going public with that? And did you expect a reaction from the organization or from people, or did you do it kind of knowing, hey, this is what's going to come with speaking out? Because, you know, people don't all want to hear that from a young player.
Yeah, you know, I really, you know, never had any pun intended behind it. You know, I really wanted to, you know, just come out and, you know, just give my opinion on it and, you know, just really speak how I was feeling. You know, I didn't, you know, wasn't necessarily wanting, you know, too much of a reaction, you know, although it might have been inevitable. But, you know, I tried to do it in the best way I could possible. You know, it was just an emotional thing at the time. And, you know, I think, you know, as a young player that, you know, really wants to just go out there and play the game he loves, it's really frustrating, you know, at this point in my career to, you know, just not be able to, you know, just really show what I'm capable of and, you know, show the steps I've taken year by year. So, you know, it was a lot of emotions early in the year and, you know, something I've really grown from and, you know, really learned how to, you know, handle situations, you know, a lot more directly and, you know, in the right manner.
Was it hard when there's a change in management? You were drafted by Sam Hinkie. You play for Brett Rond all the way through, but you were drafted by Sam Hinkie. Brian Colangelo becomes the GM. And, you know, it's natural, like, the guy who drafted you sometimes has more investment in you because he's on the line for the pick and knew you and drafted you. And then a new regime comes in. Was that an adjustment? Did you have to figure out how to interact in a different way, or did it all feel the same?
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously did have to adjust a little bit, you know, from, you know, Sam, you know, I think he said he'd never trade me. I mean, it's a business regardless, but, you know, a guy that's, you know, really values you, you know, to a high extent. And, you know, then, you know, overnight, you know, you know, your life changes and, you know, you're on the block and, you know, really uncertain about things. And, you know, it's just, you know, really changes your mindset with, you know, how you're going to approach things. But it took me some time, you know, really come to realization that, you know, I really am in this position. And, you know, I started, you know, to give more effort towards, you know, how I was going to, you know, be, you know, come out the best from it. And, you know, I think as time went along, you know, I met with Brian, you know, I think just a couple weeks after he came to Philadelphia, and it was a great meeting. And, you know, that's when I got in the gym and, you know, I was there probably for the first half of the summer, you know, every day, you know, just working out, showing, you know, what I could really be capable of.
The second half of the summer, after summer league and then sort of that pre-camp time in September, you were away in, I think, New England, preparing for the season, working out. Do you think it set you back with a new regime, or did it set you back in terms of, I don't know, your relationship with them? Was there good communication between you and them when you were away working out during that time, as you look back on it now?
You know, looking back on it, there wasn't, you know, the best communication. I think, you know, me and Coach Brown, you know, regardless, have, you know, a pretty steady relationship, a great relationship, honestly. You know, we're both from Boston, and, you know, that's definitely a, you know, connection that, you know, goes a long way. And I think me and him, you know, would always be able to keep it real with each other and, you know, analyze the situation and, you know, really, you know, just talk straight up. So, you know, as I was working out, you know, away in New England, you know, the second half of the summer, I was able to, you know, I was with a former NBA coach and John Carroll, and, you know, we were getting a lot of great work in, and I think I was making strides, you know, in the right direction. You know, transitioning from when I was there every day, in the first half of the summer.
The anticipation of Joel Embiid coming back to play and what it was going to do in the front court with you and Okafor and him. He's become, you know, the center. He's become sort of reaffirmed in their minds. This is our franchise guy. We think he's an all-star. He's been healthy. Could you see this coming from the summer, that this is the direction they were going to go? Or were you still unsure how it was going to play out based on that he hadn't played in 2 years? And maybe I can't anticipate this. Or is this how he saw the front court, the minutes, the roles all play out?
You know, I was still pretty unsure at that point. You know, all I knew is, you know, what I am. You know, I thought I was a player that, you know, could be utilized in, you know, a lot of different ways. You know, with the addition of Joel, you know, he's a great player, special player, you know, and I think, you know, he deserves everything he has. And I think, you know, I still could have been utilized regardless, or, you know, maybe even communication on, you know, what things maybe would look like going forward. But, you know, everything was, you know, still in the fog. And, you know, I was, you know, mainly focused on, you know, what I could do to get better, you know, throughout the whole summer, and just maintaining, you know, even keeled level of, you know, I just got to worry about what I can control and, you know, continue to work on the things I need to.
When you're thinking about, I'd like for them to find a way to trade me, to go to a place where I can have a bigger role. At 22 years old, in your mind, what were your thoughts about what can I do to sort of push them to move me? And I mean, when you talked at the beginning of training camp, I don't know if that was part of your thinking or sort of anything you would do day in and day out behind the scenes or with the team. Has your thought process changed at all about what a player needs to do to get himself moved? Is your head different about that than it was maybe even when you came to training camp?
Yeah, I think it most definitely is. You know, I think, you know, there's always, you know, better ways to handle things and, you know, more professional manners. And, you know, I think I've taken steady steps, you know, as the season's gone along, you know, from even when I was in Alabama, you know, rehabbing, you know, I've taken steps back and, you know, really analyzed the situation on, you know, how has it been handled. And, you know, coming from where I'm from, you know, I'm a very proud person, you know, from a proud family. And, you know, I like to, you know, be able to assert myself. But, you know, I think I've definitely taken, you know, some big steps in the right direction of just being able to handle things in a, you know, a whole new manner.
If teams around the league, and I think I talked about this on a podcast a few weeks ago when we were talking about trade stuff, if you hear that there's teams around the league, when they do their research on you or their intel, would have questions about how did Nerlens handle that? How was he behaving there? Would you say, okay, there's things that they probably could have heard about me that they were right to go, hey, do we want to trade for that guy? Or is he, can you imagine that there are things that they heard in your mind that you had to improve on, that those guys had a right to go, yeah, they better dig into that a little deeper, whether it was being late, whether it was attitude, any of that. Was it legitimate concern as they were doing their research on you?
No, I don't think so. I think, you know, since I've been in the league, you know, I've grown leaps and bounds, you know, especially with my professionalism of, you know, being on time. I think, you know, this year, I think I've been, you know, great. I haven't, you know, been late at all. And, you know, I think I've, you know, taken a step forward, especially since my, you know, rookie year, when I wasn't playing. I think that was probably my roughest year of, you know, really trying to adjust why you're not playing. You know, I definitely, you know, see, you know, where that might stem from. But, you know, I think I've taken, you know, whole leaps and bounds. And, you know, I think I'm a different person than I was, you know, as a 19-year-old rookie, you know, sitting on the bench. I mean, you know, I think it's, you know, it's just in a new place now.
You had that season-ending ACL injury at Kentucky. You set out your rookie season in the NBA after you were picked sixth and then traded on draft night to from New Orleans to Philly. Do you think people maybe don't appreciate at that age, and you had so many young guys in Philly, and the losing? I mean, it was, they were tanking, and they were going to build with this young group. But the environment that comes from all that losing, especially around a young group, and there weren't a lot of veterans around, when you look back now, was it chaotic? It's an older team now. You're much more competitive. But when you look back at what it was like at the very beginning, first year, second year, even your third year, do you have a better appreciation for how difficult of an environment that was to mature and grow and have good habits?
Oh, most definitely. You know, looking at it now, you know, I think about this, you know, from, you know, time to time, you know, over this whole season, you know, I see, you know, the type of team we have now and, you know, the vets and, you know, Gerald and, you know, Elton, you know, still being around, you know, the type of guidance that, you know, has really come about. And, you know, I think I did a well job even, you know, when they weren't around, of trying to, you know, just still learn, you know, even through, you know, playing through guys on the road and, you know, them just giving me advice. And, you know, even through the losing and everything, how tough it was, you know, just, you know, stay mentally focused, you know, I think it really just, you know, comes from, you know, my roots of just, you know, being strong and very powerful and, you know, continuing to stay on the right path and, you know, really want to achieve great things. But I think, you know, even my habits have even grown, you know, even stronger and stronger over these years. And, you know, I'm able to, you know, really look at things from a different perspective, you know, than I didn't really know how to, you know, when I was 19, 20 and, you know, through the losing and everything. So, you know, I always, you know, maintain a steady focus, you know, through the seasons of, you know, how I can, you know, not really think about the situation I'm in, about losing so consistently and just, you know, really focus on how can I go out there, change the game, be a game changer, and, you know, really apply myself and assert myself.
Early on in Philly, when the Sixers are like the butt of everybody's jokes and they're tanking, and sometimes people confuse tanking with the players don't care, the players aren't trying to win. It's a management decision. Players are like, you don't care about their draft pick. You're out trying to win and play hard. Was it tough at times, like, you know, when you're sitting on the bench and you hear people yelling stuff at you guys, like, what was it like? Like, what was it like night in and night out to sort of stay mentally strong? Like, what would you hear from people, either if you're walking down the street or in the arena? Was it constant?
Yeah, I think it was definitely tough at times, you know, especially when we go on, you know, certain losing streaks and, you know, it'd be tough, you know, watching yourself on ESPN and, you know, the laughing stock of, you know, the NBA, you know, in a way. And, you know, especially for me coming from my background of, you know, playing, you know, youth leagues through BABC, you know, the AAU team in Boston, you know, constantly winning championships and going on to Tilton, you know, playing with, you know, very good D1 players, you know, winning championships and going on to Kentucky, you know, having somewhat of a down year, but, you know, we're still winning games. So, you know, most of my life I've really, you know, been used to winning and, you know, it's been a, you know, a way of me and how I act and, you know, just always being uplifting and always wanting to play the game. And as time has come along to the NBA and, you know, it's a different situation. You know, you're losing games, you know, constantly and, you know, you really have to figure, you know, who you are, who you can be through this phase and, you know, how you're going to come out. And, you know, I think I've done nothing but, you know, really, you know, try to prepare myself for through the whole phase of it. And I think I've been able to, you know, just stay strong and, you know, be able to just, you know, bounce right through it.
When you say, like, you've got to figure out through all that who you are, that there's got to be a part of you where you've got to, in your mind, separate yourself. We're losing, but I'm not a loser. Mm-hmm. And because people want to label you that through that. Was that, like, kind of like a thing you had to remind yourself of and kind of, as much as anything, fight through?
Yeah, most definitely. You know, like I said, you know, just having a life of winning so many games and, you know, just losing, you know, when you do get to the NBA, you know, in your dream, you know, type atmosphere of, you know, finally being in the NBA and, you know, now it's tough, you know, you're losing so much and, you know, not as many people want to come to your games or, you know, just come check you out, come watch you play, you know, maybe individually, but, you know, not as a team thing, but.
You dream about being in the NBA. The first couple of years, did you say, this isn't the NBA? Like, there was an NBA. And then there was what Philly was doing. I almost felt like you were like a separate, right? I mean, did it?
Yeah, it definitely had, you know, aspects of that. You know, when you look at other teams, you know, you're watching Golden State, you know, play, you know, the night in and night out, and you see how much joy them guys have of just moving the ball, playing, winning so consistently, and you see that, then, you know, you go to your own reality, you know, in Philadelphia, and, you know, you're starting the season, you know, losing 16, 17 games, you know, just missing records. So, you know, it's a whole different world, you know, you kind of go back to and, you know, it's something that, you know, you definitely come back from and it makes you stronger when you do actually get through it. And I think that's why I've been able to, you know, just take so much adversity, you know, through these years and, you know, be able to, you know, just stay strong.
Your parents emigrated from Haiti. Two of your older brothers played college football at BC, Boston College, and at NC State. What was their story about when they came over, why they came over, what they were looking for, maybe for you and your family as a group, but what they were looking for when they moved to the States?
Yeah, my mom and my dad, they came over from Haiti probably in 1990, and you know, they didn't come over with much. You know, Haitians are very powerful people and, you know, they work, you know, very hard for what they have. And, you know, they really wanted to establish, you know, just a family in the States and, you know, have and give us opportunities to, you know, be able to go on in life and, you know, do great things. But, you know, obviously, you know, they don't come over here thinking their son's going to grow up to be 6'11 and an NBA player. So I think, you know, that was definitely a blessing. I was able to, you know, work very hard throughout, you know, my youth, ages and, you know, really develop myself into, you know, becoming an NBA player. And, you know, my parents have, you know, especially my mom, you know, has really, you know, instilled, you know, with definitely a work ethic and, you know, watching her, you know, work 12-hour shifts a day, you know, even through the night sometimes and, you know, coming home at 11 p.m. And, you know, I remember I used to always stay up, you know, and wait for her to come home and, you know, just seeing that, you know, really, like I said, you know, makes you want to go that much harder for what you want and what you have. So, you know, as time goes on, you know, you really, you know, use that in every aspect of your life of, you know, what you learned as a child.
She at times had two jobs, so she was gone morning till night a lot of times, right?
Yeah, she'd leave the house about 6:30, 7:30, and she'd come back 11, or maybe if, you know, times were different, times were a little harder, she'd work, you know, through the night, come back in the morning around 6 a.m., you know, before we leave the school. And, you know, she'd rest most of the day before she went back at 3 o'clock. So, you know, it's definitely, you know, a tough work schedule she had. And, you know, watching her, you know, go through that. And my dad, he worked on cab. He worked in the taxi business. So, I mean, it was definitely, you know, something to see, you know, how much, you know, work they had to go through.
And your brothers were good students and good athletes. And so they were playing toward scholarships, obviously playing football. So like everywhere in your life, there was like, it was work and people achieving. I mean, that's all you were surrounded with.
Oh yeah. Especially, you know, coming from the city of Boston, you know, city of, with a lot of sports, a lot of love, you know, for their sports. And, you know, especially in the town I grew up in, you know, it was a big, you know, football.
Everett.
Yeah. Everett. Yep. DiBiase would win like 7 Super Bowls in, you know, a decade. So, you know, sports was something that they took pride in. My brothers, you know, especially watching them, them being my older brothers, you know, I would look up to them, you know, with everything they did, you know, going to practice, you know, what they did, what their, you know, pretty much what their work ethics were. And, you know, especially my oldest brother, Jim, you know, he was able to show me, you know, really what it took, you know, to be able to play. And Rodman went on to NC State, to be a starter over there. And Jim, you know, was a 2-year captain at Boston College. So it was definitely, you know, I think they definitely set a good example for me.
At that age, you weren't a late bloomer, so you grew relatively quickly. Were you just not physically built for football? Did it not make sense to you? Did they try to get you on the football field, or did you say, hey, basketball is, no, you don't get hit there?
No, I was pretty good at football, though, was. Up until a certain point when, you know, they thought, you know, obviously basketball was my calling, yeah. And, you know, that was, you know, what I loved to do. So I stopped playing football about sophomore year, and I think, you know, being a multi-athlete, you know, definitely helped me, you know, shape my athleticism, you know, to help in basketball. So.
Because you don't shy away from contact in basketball. You don't shy away from it. You think that comes a little bit from being a football player?
Oh, most definitely. Oh, most definitely. I think, you know, playing football your whole life and, you know, when you transition into just basketball, it's not like you're shying away from contact or, you know, you're throwing up little flimsy shots or, you know, not boxing out Dwight Howard or, you know, the biggest guys in the league. You know, I've, you know, definitely taken that on, you know, full head of steam, you know, regardless of, you know, being 233 pounds as a, you know, big man in this league. I think I, you know, assert myself with my physique.
There's some similarities with your background and Patrick Ewing's. Patrick was obviously a great big man out of Boston. His early years were in the islands, and then he moved here. You lived here. But when you started to get more attention at basketball and you were growing and you were, you know, becoming this dominant force, you were, you know, the number one big man in the country, really number one player in the country. Would you start hearing the Ewing comparisons around Boston? Would people bring that up with you?
Oh, yeah, I definitely started hearing them probably right around the time, you know, I started coming onto the scene through, you know, the AAU circuit of Peach Jam and, you know, all those big tournaments. And, you know, the first thing you start, you know, thinking of is, you know, Cambridge, you know, Rinjin Latin and, you know, where he came from and what he went on to do in the NBA. And, you know, the only things I really had remembered, you know, was, you know, watching his classic games on, like, NBA TV and, you know, not really knowing too much about his background, you know, until I started, you know, hearing about comparisons.
At that age, and you look back now, it is hard. When you become a commodity for people and there's lots of people pulling at you in your life, how did you navigate that at that age? Because there were lots of people getting at you. There were people who had access to your life and giving you direction in different ways. How did you react to it at that age as a teenager, trying to figure out who's got my best interests at heart versus who's trying to just use me for their own gain because I'm going to be worth a lot of money to, you know, any number of people?
I think as a, you know, 17, 18 year old, you know, even, you know, from 16 when I started, you know, to be recognized as a good player, you know, it's definitely tough to actually, you know, sit back and see who actually has your best interest. And, you know, I think I did a good job of, you know, just trying to, you know, keep a circle as small as possible and you not really expose myself because, you know, I'm naturally just a private person that, you know, more keeps to myself on, you know, certain things. And, you know, I naturally just carry myself, you know, confidently, but, you know, not really, you know, open. Like you can just really not say anything to me, as freely as you would want. So I think, you know, as an 18 year old kid, you know, you're put in a certain position that, you know, I think I grew a lot from, as a number one player in the country and going on to Kentucky and being able to learn under Coach Cal and, you know, just go on.
When you think back, like you play for Leo Papil, BABC, which is a legendary program. Leo's run that program a long time. He's worked in the NBA. I think he's the only guy grandfathered because he was doing that team. As long as he was, he can still work for teams. He might be the last guy who could still do both. But Leo's been, he's had lots of great players and, you know, he knows how to run a program. When you think back at that age, though, of, and I don't know if people appreciate it as much, you mentioned Peach Jam and you go all over the country and playing these big tournaments and, you know, you're the guy everybody's watching. If you were giving a kid advice now who was like in your same situation, like what did you learn about that that you wish you knew back then about that whole environment, how it impacts a young person at a really young age? What would you tell that kid now?
You know, just really prepare yourself, you know, especially mentally, because, you know, all the physical gifts you have, you know, are going to be there. You know, God forbid injuries, but, you know, they're going to be there. So you really have to prepare yourself mentally of what's going to be thrown at you, you know, from a day-to-day basis, you know, from over the internet, you know, people just trying to get at you or, you know, the, you know, at the tournaments, you know, Joe Schmo would just come up and, you know, try to say you can do this and do that for you. And, you know, you can't, you know, really fall for all the fluff. You know, you have to really, you know, stay thorough to, you know, being yourself, you know, staying true to yourself, you know, not really exposing yourself to too much to where, you know, it'll consume your mind in a way that, you know, won't have you thinking in the right aspect of what you're really focused on. And that's to be great. That's to be going into the NBA and, you know, be an all-star and, you know, achieve many things and, you know, just achieve all your goals in life. And I think if you, you know, you just keep it pure and, you know, just stay true to yourself, you know, you'll have a smooth sailing of just, you know, always staying even keeled and, you know, doing what you want to do.
You know, you're the number one player in the country and you go to Kentucky, which is like what most number one players in the country do. They go play for Cal at Kentucky. And imagine in your mind at that time, it's like, it's a storybook. I'm the number one player. I go to Kentucky. Maybe I go to Final Four and then I'm a lottery pick and then I'm off in the NBA. Didn't exactly go that way. You were having a great year at Kentucky and then against Florida, you tear your ACL on a play around the rim. What do you remember about that night laying there on the floor and wondering, like, what does this mean for me? What does this mean for my career, my life?
Yeah, it was definitely, you know, a tough night. You know, probably just the whole period of, you know, the early ACL rehab. And it was something that you had to really sit back and say, you know, how I'm going to come back from this. You know, I want to come back stronger. I want to come back better. You know, I want to mentally come back, you know, stronger and better of having to endure, you know, all this I've gone through. And especially, you know, it was a weird situation, you know, going right into the NBA with the ACL surgery and, you know, sitting out a whole season. So, you know, it was a time where, you know, I really had to work my butt off to get back. And, you know, I think I was able to, you know, have a great work ethic through the whole time and, you know, come back even stronger than I was.
And your pre-draft process was different from almost anybody's because, like you said, you couldn't work out for people. You couldn't do anything for them other than to talk, meet with them. Because everyone's trying to figure out, A, is he physically going to be back? And guys, everybody come, like, we're in a day and age where you come back from an ACL injury and you can come back as bouncy athletic as ever, especially at your age. What do you remember about the questions they asked you or more the uncertainty of that time of, there was still some thought, maybe he still could be the number one or two pick. Like, we'll draft him even with the injury. What do you remember about, like, how you had to sort of navigate that whole pre-draft period before, you know, at the end of that year at Kentucky?
Yeah, I think it was, you know, really tough, you know, having to prove yourself, but, you know, not really, you know, having the opportunity to prove yourself because, you know, you're really just focused on rehabbing and getting ready, you know, to get back to playing basketball. So, you know, I think it was just more of, you know, just simply conversations I had and, you know, just, you know, telling them that I would, you know, come back from this, you know, being an even better player and, you know, just giving my word. And, you know, obviously it's a tough position to be in when you just, you know, you'd rather, you know, just go out there and, you know, play a pickup game, you know, at the pre-draft workouts and, you know, just show your athleticism. But, you know, it's a different situation that I had to, you know, sit back and analyze and, you know, handle it, you know, different at, you know, 18 years old.
Would you have ever imagined when the injury happened and they tell you, okay, here's the rehab schedule, would you ever imagine that you weren't going to play at all your rookie year?
No, I honestly never, you know, really imagined that. I think, you know, I was going to do the, you know, normal rehab window time of 8 to 10 months, you know, maybe up to a year. But, you know, it ends up being 18 months and, you know, through the team's best choices, you know, looking forward to the future, you know, for me. I think, you know, something I can't really look back and regret on, but, you know, something that you don't really, you know, picture yourself sitting out a whole rookie year and, you know, not taking in that game experience and having a chance, you know, just come straight out of college and, you know, just be able to prove yourself.
When you're young, you don't always have to have a lot of patience with things. Things kind of, in your career, they'd kind of keep coming. You had success. What did you learn about sort of your capacity to have patience and how you had to learn to sort of incorporate it? Because I'm sure you were bouncing off the walls initially, going stir crazy, but at some point you've got to, I would imagine it would drive you nuts if you don't figure out how to harness the whole thing.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. You know, it's definitely at times it's really tough for me to, you know, really sit back and, you know, look and just be sidelined, you know, game after game or, you know, time after time of not being able to, you know, be on restrictions half the time and, you know, just like some of the guys on my team are going through, which I try to, you know, help them, keep them involved, you know, cause I've done been through it. So, you know, I learned a lot that year about myself and, you know, being able to come back from that and being able to take a seat and, you know, really learn the game, you know, from the bench and, you know, learning the speed of the game and, you know, how it, you know, could, you know, benefit me when I come back.
Nerlens, now when, you know, I know you're on social media and you see it and you hear things. When you have a game like you had against Boston the other night where you're, you know, impacting the game all over the floor, and then you go, if you might go look at your Twitter, do you see like 20 fans of like 29 other teams going, hey, we got to trade for Nerlens. Nerlens, tell them to trade you to us. Do you start to hear that stuff? Does it at least make you feel like, hey, people are noticing what I'm doing here?
Yeah, I think so. You know, that's my mindset, you know, just go out there and play my game. And, you know, it's something that, you know, is definitely reassuring, you know, when you see people that, you know, do say they would like me on their team. And, you know, it tells yourself that, you know, you're doing the right thing. You know, you're going out there, you're playing, you know, your best basketball and trying to maximize, you know, what you can do in the time that you're there. So, you know, it's definitely a good feeling to, you know, see that. And, you know, it just keeps me going. But at the same time, I also do see, you know, how much love I do get from the city of Philadelphia and, you know, how much they do talk about keeping me in the city. So, you know, that's definitely something, you know, I definitely appreciate as well, you know, how much love that city has given to me since, you know, I first got there.
Have you had conversations recently with Brian Colangelo, or how regularly do you even talk to Brian about trade possibilities, your status? How do you and he kind of communicate on that?
Honestly, we don't communicate at all on it. You know, I just know he's going to handle his business how, he needs to and how he wants to. So, you know, it's just very, you know, we say what's up every time we see each other. And yeah, I never really worry about, you know, really asking him really what's going on.
Do you think maybe the average fan sometimes doesn't understand it's hard to understand where the player's coming from on this? Because when people talk about it being a business, I think they always look at it from the team end, because a team will trade a guy or cut a veteran and they'll go, hey, it's a business, right? And so the loyalty to that player, we have to make a decision for the organization. But then maybe sometimes, especially with a young player, that your window is now to prove yourself and to be in position this summer to get a contract extension. Do you think it's hard for people to maybe understand where you're coming from on wanting in a contract year, this is essential for you to be able to prove your value and to give yourself some negotiating leverage come the summer?
Yeah, most definitely. I feel like I think people have seen, you know, certain scenarios like this, and, you know, when people do reach a contract year and, you know, they are trying to, you know, be able to, you know, have minutes and, you know, showcase themselves, you know, because obviously, you know, there's a human side to it as well of, you know, just making sure you want to be, you know, in the greatest position possible of, you know, being able to approach, you know, a free agency summer, you know, with the best odds on your side. And, you know, I think people, you know, generally, you know, can understand, you know, maybe where I come from at times. And, you know, after growing, you know, from speaking out, you know, I think at that time, you know, it's just, you know, obviously through emotions, but, you know, I think as time goes on, you grow and, you know, you see things differently.
Can you imagine a scenario where you and Embiid could play together, play a lot of minutes together? Do you guys complement each other the way you see it on the floor? Do you feel like you could play off each other significant minutes?
I definitely feel so. You know, obviously the NBA, you know, is kind of going in a small ball way, obviously, you know, with, you know, stretch fours and everything. But, you know, I think, you know, there's obviously, you know, instances in the game, you know, just like the Celtics, maybe you can do it a little more if they're starting, you know, Horford and Amir Johnson. So I think, you know, Coach Brown is, you know, really just easing into, you know, how he wants to do it. And, you know, I think it's just something that you got to have patience with. But, you know, obviously you got to do the best thing for the team. And I think obviously me and Joel can, you know, be something special when we play together defensively, you know, being able to both of us protect the rim and, you know, myself being more agile to guard a perimeter four and him stay around the rim. Then offensively, you know, I think it just takes care of itself because I think we're both just big men that have, you know, like kind of like a sixth sense to the game. You know, we're able to, you know, pass and, you know, be able to, you know, make right decisions on the court. And, you know, we're both athletic, run the floor. And I think, you know, that's a whole dimension itself.
Nerlens, listen, I appreciate you taking time out to visit. Good to sit down, man. Good luck the rest of the way. I know we'll catch you soon, man.
All right, thank you. Thanks for having me, Walsh.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Vertical Podcast with Woj. A big thank you to our guest today, Nerlens Noel. Remember to subscribe and listen to new and archived episodes wherever you listen to the podcast, and be sure to subscribe to the Vertical Podcast with Chris Mannix. You can find us at thevertical.com, iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, Google Play, and you can now hear the Vertical Podcast Network every weekday at 3 p.m. Eastern on SiriusXM Satellite Radio, on Sirius Channel 214, XM Channel 203, and on the SiriusXM app on Channel 967. We'll catch you next time.
Whoa! This has been a digital media production. Find your voice.